in the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha, text number 26.
Saha, he, Ahata, having been struck, Vishvajita, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He, though, Avajnaya, indifferently, Paribhramat, wheeling, Gatraha, body, Udasta, bulged out, Lochanaha, eyes, Vishrina, broken, Bahu, arms, Angri, legs, Shira Ruha, hair, Apatat, fell down, Yatha, light, Naga Indrai, Naga Indraha, a gigantic tree, Lulitaha, uprooted, Nabaswata, by the wind. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Though struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets, his arms and legs broken, and the hair on his head scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Purport. It does not take even a moment for the Lord to kill any powerful demon, including Hiranyaksha. The Lord could have killed him long before, but He allowed the demon to display the full extent of his magical feats. One may know that by magical feats, by scientific advancement of knowledge, or by material power, one cannot become equal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His one signal is sufficient to destroy all our atoms. His inconceivable power, as displayed here, is so strong that the demon, despite all his demoniac maneuvers, was killed by the Lord when the Lord desired, simply by one slap. Om Ajnanati Nirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namasude Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vancha Vatpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayavacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we've been hearing about this pastime of Lord killing the demon. Initially, the Lord could have killed him straight away, as stated in the purport. But Lord did not do so, just so that the original purpose for which He let Jay and Vijay offend the Kumaras, the reason being He wanted to enjoy the pastime of having fight, enjoying the Viryaras. So clearly we can see the events leading up to the point of the death of Hiranyaksha. Lord did have his good time. It's a typical, we can call a boxing match or some other event where it's like one opponent is striking the other opponent is kind of losing his power, and then the audience shouting woo and things like that. And then the demigods were worried because at one time the mace of the Lord fell. And does it mean that the Lord has lost the fight? No, the one who is fighting against him is his own doorkeeper. So the devotee sometimes can win over the Lord. We will see how the Lord, even though is described as Ajita, still he can be conquered. And also how, despite having inconceivable powers, we can still attempt to understand him. So at one stage Brahma was trying to tell the Lord, "No, the time is running out, please kill him." The Lord mercifully glanced at Brahma and gave a smile also. The Lord was thinking, "I am time personified and you are telling me that I should kill him within the auspicious time, otherwise I can't kill him." It shows that out of love, the devotee can also order the Lord, "Oh, please do it before the time runs out." But the Lord took it in a nice way. Yes, a devotee is ordering me, so then yes, okay, I'll do it at the auspicious time. But he got carried away with this sportive activity of striking the mace and then aiming at the chin of the enemy. Then Hiranyaksha strikes the Lord back and the Lord's mace falls off. And then Hiranyaksha, just to increase the anger of the Lord, does not strike him back. He says, "You pick up the weapon now. Come on." It's like increasing the anger of the Lord to incite him to fight more. And he initially follows the combat rules, where you don't strike an enemy unarmed. So the Lord's fury increases. This is all loving exchanges between the Lord from a different perspective. So at that time, the Lord is unarmed, but then he invokes Sudarshan Chakra. So then, now that the Lord has got a weapon, now Hiranyaksha strikes back, he throws a trident. And now the Sudarshan Chakra cuts the trident off. The Sudarshan Chakra is very significant in a sense that Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate whether a demon is a Brahmana or of any other category. It appears wherever demons are to protect the devotees. Example Prabhupada gives in the purport is that when Maharaj Ambarish was in danger caused by a Brahmana, Durvasamani, Sudarshan Chakra was there to protect him. Sudarshana does not discriminate between who, whether the demon is big or small, whether he is from Brahmin family or other than that. He just wants to kill the enemies of the devotees and the Lord. So that's why it's called Sudarshan. So he invokes Sudarshan, kills the we could have, I was anticipating that the Lord will throw the Sudarshan and that will go and cut the neck of Hiranyaksha and that's how he will die. But later in this verse, it's a climax, anti-climax, and then unexpected turn, just by the slap in the ear. Nobody dies by the slap in the ear. You just get a slap and then, you just rub it off or you just give a slap back. But here the slap of the Lord is just sufficient to break the bones, to get the eyes of the demon out of the sockets, the hair got scattered. All that happened. Before that, again, the demon, initially though he followed the rules of combat, later when he thinks that, okay, it's no longer going to be working, so I'm just directly hit the Lord with my hand and that does not work out, so then he tries to crush the Lord and that doesn't work out, so then he starts to use his mystic power. So demons, when they think that, okay, they can win, they'll just follow the rules, but when they think that they will lose, they will start breaking the rules and do all the mystic things where you can see all the inauspicious things happening, the sounds coming, then the naked demon hanging upside down, and then an array of stones being thrown. These are all done by the mystic power of the demon. So the demigods thought it's the end of the world. So even a pastime happening between a devotee and the Lord is sufficient enough to scare the even the demigods. They think that's the end of the world. But the Lord knew it's all the play of the demon. We can see something similar happening when Dhruva Maharaj was overcome by the yakshas. Initially Dhruva Maharaj will kill all the yakshas left, right, center. He'll be going on a mass killing. Then the yakshas will initially appreciate him. Oh yeah, you're very good. Let's fight with you. And then later on, when things didn't work out, they'll also engage in something similar, showing all these kind of mystic things. At one stage, Dhruva Maharaj will be overcome by them, but later, by the advice of the brahmanas and the sages, he will invoke the Narayana weapon, and that will immediately dispel the mystic power. So here also, the Lord invokes the Sudarshan Chakra again. That then he thought, okay, I had enough now. So then he just gives a slap, and then the demon dies. So the Prabhupada in the purport mentions that just by doing some magical feats, mystic powers, or by advancement of knowledge, by scientific advancement of knowledge, or by material power, one cannot become equal to the Lord. So Srimad Bhagavatam begins with defining who the Lord is. No one is above him or equal to him. That's why he is God. So the definition of many times when we talk to people, especially atheists, when we don't have a clear grounding on which to talk with, we may not be able to defend. So but when we say that he does not do anything, his only occupation is to be happy and enjoy, and he has got multiple energies which does the work for him. Parasha Shaktir Vividha Iva Shruyate. So these energies work and do the job for him, and he just simply enjoys. No one is equal to him or above him. So that is why he is God. If he has got something to do, which means he is also like us, but he does not have anything to do, and he has delegated things to his different energies, they are taking care nicely what needs to be done. All he has to do is desire, and then things will get done. His inconceivable power, as displayed here, is so strong that the demon, despite all his demoniac maneuvers, was killed by the Lord when the Lord desired. So simply the Lord desired, it's sufficient, I've had enough. So then he just gave a slap and then he died. So now we'll try to focus on the inconceivable aspect of the Lord, and then we will try to look at how the Lord deals with the material energy, whether he is actually involved in it or not, whether he gets entangled because he is doing so many activities, how does he remain aloof. One time he says, everything rests on me. Another time he says, nothing rests on me, I am aloof. So this part he himself explains in Bhagavad Gita. So we'll read few verses from Bhagavad Gita and then try to understand, make an attempt to understand the inconceivable aspect of the Lord. So his relationship with the material world and then the jivas, and how he controls both. So we understand that from his statement in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, where he says that through his unmanifested form he is all pervading, and everything in this cosmic world is a combination of his superior or inferior energy. Prabhupada gives an example how the sunshine is spread all over the universe. The same way, the Lord's energy is spread throughout and the universe is resting in that energy only. Now, because he is spread everywhere, usually if one thing is spread everywhere, it should not have a central presence. That's how if I take a piece of paper and then tear it into four pieces and throw it into different directions, the original paper does not exist. But here we see, even though the Lord is spread everywhere, does not mean that He is no longer present and He is no longer a person. He is still a person, He is present, and still He is present everywhere. For this we understand through the example of how there is a king, and then he has a government, and then there are different departments. These different departments are the king's energies. The king's influence is spread throughout his entire kingdom. At the same time, the king does not have to be present in each and every department to personally manage those departments. His influence is spread throughout the kingdom, yet he as a person is residing in his own palace, and his being controlled, he can exercise control throughout the entire country. Similarly, the Lord stays in his abode, and through his different energies he is exercising control, and still he is a person. So the material manifestation here, although we say the Lord creates it, it's not done directly by Him, creation, maintenance and annihilation. Just by the will of the Lord, He does all that, and yet He is remaining aloof. So the Lord Himself gives an example how to understand. Now, how are you saying that you are doing all activities and yet you are aloof and you are exercising control? Because if we are engaging in a work, we get our hands dirty by just getting into it. And we can't remain aloof and then still exercise control over it. That's the usual understanding. So just to give us, Krishna Himself gives the example here, how through the example of wind that is blowing. The wind that is blowing exercises its control everywhere, but it is still under the control of sky. The sky controls the wind, but still the sky does not touch the wind. It still exercises the control. Wind has the freedom to move, but only up to the extent where the sky is. It cannot go beyond the sky. So the living entities do have their independence, and they have their area to work, but it is still under the control of the Lord. Because the Lord is controlling it, it does not have to get entangled. Just like the sky does not get dirty because of the wind blowing or anything. It's the influence of the wind does not affect the sky, but still the sky controls the wind. So now that we have an example, and as per the statement of Krishna, He is inconceivable. Because we have an example and now we have understood, so Krishna is now conceivable, right? And His statement, His previous statement, has become false. It's not like that. So Acharyas explain that even though Krishna gives an example, you can conceive only the example. He is presenting the example so that you can understand it. Up to the level of the example you can understand, and you can get a very small glimpse of what is actual inconceivable powers. So that is how we need to go through the purports of Srila Prabhupada and the previous Acharyas to understand the actual meaning of what is the inconceivable energy of the Lord. So He, because He is doing so much of activities, He has to be involved in so many creation, maintenance. So at some stage He has to kill somebody, some stage He has to create something, some stage He has to maintain. So naturally, when a normal human being is involved, you tend to be biased to somebody, you tend to be harsh against somebody. But despite all this, Krishna says that I am neutral. I just only give the direction, and then material energy takes care. He just only supervises. So He uses the word Maya Dakshena. Under my eyes, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyatechas Racharam. So He is the sea giving father. He glances the material energy, and then from then on, material nature takes, starts the its working. But without the glance of the Lord, nothing happens. So in that way, he still maintains the control. But later on, the material energy does the work for him. Prabhupada gives the example of how a high court judge, he rewards a person, he puts another person in jail, he awards death sentence to another person, but still he is neutral. He is doing the right thing for each and every person. That's what each and everyone deserves. That's what he is doing. Still, as a judge, he is neutral. He is not showing attachment to somebody. That's why I'm giving $1,000 award. Oh, I don't like him. Just okay, hang him. Not like that. At the same time, the judge has the entire control of what he can do. Now, how is it that the Lord, sitting at a distance, is able to exercise his control and still remain aloof and not get entangled? Another example given in the Smritis is that we have a flower at a distance, and then we have a smelling power of a person. So the flower does not necessarily has to come in touch with the nose. So even at a distance, the smelling power of the person can smell the fragrance. So that is how the Lord, even though at a distance, is able to do the activities by the power. The smelling of the flower and the flower itself, they don't have to come together. So you can do at a distance. Similarly, the material world is created just by the glance of the Lord, and that's how he is not getting attached to the activity. So everything is coming from him. He is all pervading, and he has complete control over the material energy, and still he is aloof. This is just one aspect of the inconceivable energy of the Lord. Now we have given so much of technical examples to digest. Now we don't have any scope of understanding the Lord, because the Lord himself says that he is inconceivable. So which means we cannot understand him. Now why should we engage in a process that is going to, anyway we are not going to understand the Lord, so why do we do this whole thing? So let us stop doing this activity and get back to normal work, because Krishna himself says that he is inconceivable and his words are absolute. No, the correct way of understanding is, yeah, Krishna does say that he is inconceivable, but there are also verses that gives hope as to how he is conceivable. Famous verse which Srila Prabhupada often quotes and which is very relevant to all of us is, just by engaging the tongue in two activities, what are they? Chanting and tasting Mahaprasad. Yeah. So, I'll read that verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the translation. So because Krishna's name, form, qualities are all on the absolute platform, you cannot understand them. But when a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, what happens is that the senses become purified. This is one of the example or the argument which we may come across. You are saying that senses are imperfect and your process is also invalid, because with imperfect senses you are doing bhakti, so you are not going to get any result. So what's the point? So this argument can be counteracted. Yes, initially when we start off, our senses are imperfect. I have a disease. But if I say that, oh, the disease is so strong that I cannot even take the medicine. No, the medicine is powerful and it will initially cure your disease, then give you the strength it will purify you, then you can come back to normal. So initially our senses are not purified, but by engaging them in the Lord's service. Atah Sri Krishna Namadi Namave Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukkehi Jivado Swayam Eva Spratyadaha. So just by engaging the tongue in tasting the remnants of the Lord and by chanting, it gradually becomes purified and one can understand who Krishna really is. This is one of the hope-giving verses. We will discuss the other one, which Brahma, when he gets bewildered by Lord Krishna and the Brahma Vimohan Leela, later he offers a lot of prayers to Lord. And this is a very interesting set of prayers where we also have the other famous one, where a person, just by engaging his body, mind and words in the service of the Lord, he just have to wait patiently and naturally and eventually, just like a son has to remain alive to inherit the wealth of his father, similarly you will also get the mercy of the Lord. Tattena kampam susamikshamam bunjan evatma kritam vipakam harit vak apupir vidatan namaste jivetaya mukti padecha dayabak. The dayabak is one who can inherit the wealth. What's the condition is, you have to engage your body, mind and words in the service of the Lord. And just by continuously sticking to the process, you can attain the Lord. Another very interesting hope-giving verse, which is very relevant to today's purport, is today's purport, Prabhupada says that you cannot understand the Lord through material opulence, through scientific advancement of knowledge, or through mental speculation. So Brahma also establishes the same thing. What he says is, those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words and mind offer all respects to the descriptions of your personality and activities. So it is highly relevant to what Prabhupada is saying today. So as soon as we hear the process, so we naturally think, I have to change my position, change my location and go to some, I cannot be in a particular position where I am, I have to go to a holy place and that's where I can execute. No. Prabhupada a lot of time quotes this, sthane stita srutigatam tanuvan manopir. Even while remaining situated in their established social positions. So you remain in your social position, whatever you are, don't throw that away. But what you just do is, offer respects with your body, mind and words to the description of the Lord. And you have to dedicate your life to the narrations which are vibrated by your pure devotees. So you remain in your social position, throw away the intention to do speculation, throw away the desire for material opulence, but engage in hearing the descriptions of the Lord and dedicated your life by hearing these narrations in the association of the devotees. Then what's the result? You have a process here. There are do's, there are don'ts. If there is a process, then naturally there must be a result. What's the result is, that person who is unconquerable, ajita, now he becomes conquerable. I will read the actual verse.
Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavadiya vartam sthane stita sudigatam tanuvan manopir e prayasho ajita jita api asita istri lokyam.
So this last line says, e prayasho ajita, that person who we read in this verse also is ajita, who is unconquerable. That unconquerable person becomes conquered. This is 10.14.3 prayers by Lord Brahma. A prayaso ajita jita. That person who is otherwise unconquerable becomes conquered just by doing what? By engaging their body, mind and words to the narrations of the Lord which are vibrated by the pure devotees. That is how the unconquerable Lord becomes conquered. Now in the purport there are very interesting points which we can use as an encouragement for our daily spiritual activities. So Udapasya means even a slight endeavor to understand the absolute truth is enough. But that slight endeavor should not be mental speculation, or because mental speculation leads only to the impersonal understanding. So only we just need to hear. So the body, mind and words a devotee engages by paying obeisances to the Lord, by hearing about Him and by calling out His name. And he can touch the feet of the Lord, and when the Lord is giving audience he can see, and then the mind naturally will think about the Lord. So this is how the Lord becomes conquered by the devotee. Lord becomes Jita, whereas he becomes Ajita because the non-devotees can neither come here nor can they take the darshan nor can they appreciate anything. That's why for them he remains Ajita. But for the devotees, he remains conquered. Then how is Krishna becoming conquered? Acharyas give a further explanation. So Krishna's body is also conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotees. So the body, mind and words being conquered, we can conquer the body, mind and words of Krishna also. How? Because Krishna, when he sees pure devotee, always stands by the side of his pure devotees. Example is Maharaj Ambarish. He gave his own Sudarshan Chakra. You keep Sudarshan Chakra with you. And any danger is next to you, it will always protect you. This is how Krishna's body is conquered. Now, how are Krishna's words conquered? We always hear many verses where the Lord is praising the devotees. Forgot the verse where the Lord will say, I am not in Vaikuntha but I am in the place where my pure devotees are chanting my glories. So in this way the Lord's words are always constantly engaging in glorifying his own devotees. This is how the Lord's words are becoming conquered. Anybody knows the verse? Vaikuntha is not here, but it's there where my devotees sing my glories. Tatra tishtami narada. Anyway, so he becomes conquered because he is constantly engaged in glorifying the Lord. Now, how does Krishna's mind become conquered? Because in his mind he is always thinking about the law, his own devotees and about their welfare. So that is how his mind becomes conquered.
Can you plug it into the other one? It's not working.
So Krishna's body becomes conquered because he stands next to his devotees. His words become conquered because he always glorifies his devotees. His mind is always thinking about his devotees. That's how his mind is also becoming conquered. By engaging our body, mind and words in Krishna's service, we are able to capture Krishna's body, mind and words also. So, as mentioned, we just have to offer our obeisances. We just have to engage our ears, our hands and head will touch the floor, and then our ears will be engaged in hearing the topics about the Lord, and we have to have a feeling of great reverence and pleasure while hearing the topics of the Lord. In this way, by acquiring even a small amount of transcendental knowledge about Krishna, we can conquer him and go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life in the Lord's own abode. This is how that person who is Abhijna Swarak, inconceivable, then he himself described, just by a fragment of my energy I manage this whole thing. I have shown you only a small fraction of my opulence. Krishna Das said, behold my opulence. Such an opulent person who has inconceivable potencies and energies at his own command, he also becomes conquered just by engaging our body, mind and words in hearing about him, in tasting the remnants of his food, in chanting. So the process seems simple, right? Just engage body, mind, words, and then the result is we go back home, back to garden. But what prevents us from actually engaging in these? One of them I'll probably try to address is our attitude towards other fellow devotees. Because if the Krishna has such a high respect for his devotees, and he expects us also to have the same. So while in one of the verses where the yogi has to meditate on the different limbs of the Lord, so he will meditate on the club, which is the Kaumodaki, the club that is in the hand of the Lord, that is always smeared with the blood of the demons. Kaumodaki bhagavato daitam smareta digdhamarati vadashobita kardamena. So then it will describe, he also wears a garland. This garland is always surrounded by bees. Malam madhubrata varuta giropagushtam. Next statement is the most profound one. Chaityasya tatvam amalam animasya kante. Then we see the decoration, necklaces around the Lord's neck. Who are present in those necklaces are the dearmost devotees of the Lord. They are present in the necklace of the Lord. Chaityasya tatvam amalam manimasya kante. The Lord treats the devotees so close that he keeps them around his own neck so close. So that is the amount of awe and reverence and respect that we should try to endeavor to have for fellow devotees if we don't have it. And avoid the aspect of fault finding where that is going to decrease the respect towards other devotees. If we are not in a position of authority over others, and when we see the fault of other devotees, we just have to be remain neutral and just see one aspect of the Lord. This devotee is surrendered to the Lord. Krishnaika Sharanam. That's it. We see only that aspect of the Lord, of the devotee, sorry. Krishnaika Sharanam. He is surrendered to the Lord. That's it. Rest of them, I don't have to bother because I am not his authority anyway. In that way, we can get out of the trap of fault finding. We just see only the aspect of the Lord. He is surrendered to the Lord. That's it. Nothing else matters to me. Now, if you are the authority of the person and you are seeing the faults in him, now one has to introspect and be very honest and see, am I correcting the person genuinely for his well-being, or is my demoniac tendency coming out? So in that case, if we see the fault and we are urged to correct him, so we just have to step back and think, is this my actual intention to correct him, or I'm just trying to lord over him? So then when we clear our consciousness, ask these questions, do a self-assessment, then we'll be in a position to convey the message correctly. So you as a person can take up the role of just observing the person and not making comments, oh, you're always like this, you always do things wrongly, making those statements which are like blanket statements making that person feel low. Rather than this, saying that, okay, when I observe you doing so and so thing, I feel this. This is what I feel. So, you are naturally expressing it and you are just remaining as an observer and telling what you are feeling rather than making a blanket judgment. You are always like this, you are so and so, blah blah blah. Rather than be an observer, this is what you are doing, just state. Say for example, the offering time, which I personally also do a lot of time, I make the offering plate late and then the pujaris here are kind enough when I am cooking. So when somebody comes and tells, Prabhu, always you are late, our offering is always late, Prabhu. Nothing you like do, puris are burned, this is that, this is like that, and then blah blah blah. Okay. Prabhu, now the time is 8 o'clock. We've reached a point where we cannot go behind. Will you be able to get the plates ready and go? So that you're just stating, the time is 8 means, okay, he knows that, okay, the offering plate has to be ready by so and so time. You just stated a fact. You never told him that you do things wrongly. You stated a fact and indicated that you have told the situation, offering has to be done on time. So then probably then ask him, will you be willing to come early and start the cooking? So you as a person has told the facts and you also asked him for a request for an action, because an authority also needs to tell his expectation and then this is what I want and this is what this is like, clearly explaining him rather than just bluntly saying this and then you go off another direction and he goes off another direction. Each time you see each other, you don't want to see each other, and you are suppressing itself, and then one fine day it will all burst out. Rather than that, take a step back. Am I really in a position to tell things? If not, assess yourself, then take some time. Then if it's happening very regularly and it's affecting, it has to be brought out, it has to be corrected. And you can ask him, like, you can go put yourself in his shoes and see, is your health okay? You seem to be coming late very regularly. Are you getting enough sleep? If he says yes and all that, still he is not able to come on time, will you be able to come on time? Because that's the standard here we are trying to follow. So in that way, you are able to convey what you want to say, and at the same time you don't put the other person down. In this way we can come out of the trap of fault finding. At the same time, as an authority, if we want to convey something to somebody and get things done, then we can do that as well. So just to summarize quickly, we saw how the Lord is inconceivable, but He is still conceivable through by engaging His body, our body, mind and words in Him, and He has a very high regard for His devotees, and the same way we also have to have high regard for the devotees and not to engage in finding fault with Him. At the same time, when things have to be told, we tell it in an appropriate way. So I'll conclude here. If there are any questions, comments, corrections? Okay. Yes, it is. It is in 10:14. Ten, 14:3. Srila Prabhupada's purports. So Prabhupada has quoted from different acharyas, from Srila Sanatan Goswami, then from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah, this is a very famous verse in Prabhupada. A lot of time he quotes this one. Stane stita suti gataam tanuvan manopir. You don't have to change your social status. Just be where you are and execute your devotional service. Engage your tongue, jivanti sanmukaritam, and your ears in hearing the topics. and give up jnane prayasam, the endeavor for attaining knowledge through speculation, that you have to give up. Just pay obeisances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else? Yes. That is the description about how the devotees are the necklace in the lords. That is 3:28:28. Yeah, that's one. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki cha. Yes, bro. Yes, bro. Is it necessary for a devotee to conquer Krishna? We don't have to do bhakti with the idea of conquering Krishna, but just to please him, we start doing activities. The end result is he becomes conquered. So our intention doesn't have to be that. So that's why the pure definition, pure devotional service definition, anya bilashita shunyam. So that is how we understand the activities have to be done with a mood to please Krishna. Then you have to do the activities with an intention to please Krishna, not that you did something unintentionally and it pleased Krishna. That's not pure bhakti. But when you do pure devotional service, Krishna becomes conquered. So both the aspects are emphasized. It is not so easy, sudurlabha. But at the same time, if you do it, so the last line of the purport, Prabhupada says that in this way, a sincere devotee who has acquired even a small amount of transcendental knowledge about Lord Krishna can conquer him and thus go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life at the Lord's side. So our objective need not be to conquer the Lord, but to strictly follow in the footsteps of the Acharya. So Vaidhi Bhakti means we follow whatever the Acharya say. We don't have automatic natural attraction to the Lord. So we follow Vaidhi Bhakti, and Prabhupada here is saying, if you do this, naturally you will conquer the Lord. So that is how we understand the greatness of the Lord first. So the initial cantos of the Bhagavatam, they tell about the Lord's universal form, his power, potency. Such a person later on becomes conquered by the Lord. In Krishna's pastimes, never in any Vaikuntha pastime you will see the Vaikuntha Vasis climbing on the chest of shoulder of Vishnu and doing pranks or putting things in his mouth. Nothing like that happens. Satya Ajita becomes Jita by this pure devotional service. So I think Kesha Prabhu mentioned that those who even died in the battlefield seeing Krishna, who appreciated the beauty, they go into Vaikuntha, but more attraction, more devotion they go to Vaikuntha, they go to Goloka. Tataiva chanye naraloka veera e ahave Krishna mukara vindam. Netrai pibanto nayanaviramam, by drinking through their eyes, netrai pibanto nayanaviramam parthastra puta padamapurasya. When they were being killed by the arrows of Partha, Parthasraputa Padamapurasya, they were drinking the Netra Pibanto, Nayanabhi Ramam. Through their eyes, they are drinking the beauty of Krishna. So they all got liberated. So, even a slight thing that you do can take you to things. So, what if you engage your full body, mind, and words in Krishna's service? So, that is how we understand. So, to summarize, just you don't have to do it with the intention to conquer Krishna, but as a byproduct of your devotion, he becomes conquered. Hare Krishna. Grantharashramad Bhagavatam ki, Jaya Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki, Jaya Agnitai Gaur Premana.